Okay, we're going to call a meeting to order. We have a quorum, and as such here, we're going to begin with the first order of business. Actually, isn't on the agenda, but we're going to ask Mr. Mark Shields to come to the table. Mark Shields is our new director here, and we're going to ask him to, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, and we want to welcome you here to the gaming industry.
All right. Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name for the record is Mark Shields. I'm the Assistant Director of the Gambling Enforcement Division of the Department of Public Safety. Our recent newly appointed director has made, as you're probably well aware, made a personal decision, a family decision, to go back home and a fine gentleman. And so in the very short term, I'll be running the day-to-day business of the Alcohol Gambling Enforcement Division. I'm kind of an old penny that's coming back. I spent many, many years in government. I think I spent 17 consecutive legislative sessions up testifying in these rooms. I was wearing a different hat at that time. I was superintendent of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. After I left the Department of Public Safety BCA job, I spent 2 years in the Attorney General's office, was the Director of Criminal Justice Policy. After that, I went down to the city of St. Paul, and I was the deputy mayor, chief of staff for Mayor Coleman for a brief 2-year period. And at that time, I was received a tap on the shoulder from as a government employee to go to the private sector, and I spent about 7 years running a large security company, American Security Company, LLC, armored cars, security guards, based here in the Midwest. And then we sold our company. I kind of went into retirement. And then not too long ago, the Commissioner of Public Safety asked me if I would consider coming back and helping him with kind of the new emerging field that obviously is getting a lot of attention, the whole gaming industry. And I said I'd be glad to help out. So that's why I'm here. I'm getting up to speed. I have some excellent staff. And as I look into the audience, it's a lot of people I've dealt with over the many, many years. And so although new to some of you, I have some experience, and I look forward to working and advancing anything I can do to help from our department's perspective.
Well, welcome, and thank you for the introduction.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Shields, members? Sandra? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman Westerberg, and welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Shields, it's always good to have somebody who knows the ropes coming back. You know, my concern, and I think many of my colleagues share this, is that the state, in regard to Indian gaming, does fulfill its obligations found in the compact, or the compacts. And your office has had a lot of correspondence from me and from others requesting the inspection reports. And so I hope that those will be available in timely fashion, and also that we are being aggressive about requesting audits from the tribes. You know, the state doesn't regulate that industry to the extent, you know, that the federal government does, but we are an open government, the state of Minnesota, and I think we owe it to our people to make sure that we complete the commitment that we made in the compacts when we signed those. So I look forward to receiving that information from you. And I do have a question for you. We talked with Mr. Ball in our last presentation in this committee about moving more from security and law enforcement to a technology side. And I'm wondering, are you going to be changing your department in such a way that when our inspectors go out, they know everything there is to know about the technology that's now involved in a casino game machine, Class 3? And will we also be, you know, scrutinizing Class 2 as it emerges into a technology that's very similar to Class 3?
Mr. Shields.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, a couple quick responses on your last question first. The whole notion of sending out individuals from our organization to take a look at the very technology-based casino industry is a point well made. And my position is that although we have, and I'm blessed with some very talented law enforcement individuals on my staff, I think that as I look into the future, hiring individuals who do not have to be credentialed like that, that have technology experience, we'd be better suited. The dilemma, if you will, and I'll make a note of this, is as you're well aware, under the compacts, our limited area is on in two particular areas, under 4, number 6 in the compacts. So under blackjack and the games of chance on the floors, we are somewhat restricted in terms of our overview. Having said that, what I have been told consistently since I've been there, that the tribes are very receptive to oversight. I think it's in their best interest as well. And, however, to get more funds, if you will, which would allow me to hire the technical staff I want, we would have to go back and negotiate that in a compact arena. So that would be the first area that I would pursue that. In the interim, until any of that funding through the compact negotiation process might or might not occur, I'm going to gravitate towards looking at empty positions when they come aboard to fill them in that venue. I forgot the first part of it. I may have answered it.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shields, how about inspection reports and request of the audit? Will those be more readily available? And will we be fulfilling our obligation, or it's not really an obligation, but a statement in the compact that says the state can request the audits?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that not we, the public, know, but so that you, as the experts, know that this industry, and it's a growing industry, we know that, and maybe even going to wireless for all we know. But, you know, we just have to be responsible as a government that has a compact with other governments that are outside our purview to make sure that there's integrity.
All right, Mr. Shields. Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, in the term, the generic term of audits, I look at it in two arenas. One is we do go out. As a matter of fact, we just concluded a round of meeting with the different tribes, and according to the compacts, our authority to determine, A, if a audit, financial audit, has been done, and then to do essentially a cursory review of it to give us the comfort level that it was done properly according to accounting practices and so on. That has been recently accomplished. I think most of them have been done. We have a couple who, frankly, exercise their sovereign nation status that say, we've done it, and that's essentially all you need to know. So that's kind of a thorny issue that I need to explore a little bit further. I don't want to get on the wrong side. I mean, if it's done, it's been done. But at the same time, our obligation is to not only hear that it's been done, to take it to the next step. As far as the other component to audits, which is obviously taking a look at the games of chance on the floor, we, with limited staff, we do get out. Not to the extent that we should or could. I mean, we'd like to do more. But to those that we have done, I feel comfortable, at least the files and reports that I've seen so far, that those on-site inspections have gone well. You know, they're twofold. We look at the blackjack, and that's kind of an eyeball situation a little bit more. But as far as the actually looking at the machines themselves, and I think when I read the LAC report, they certainly gave indication that we should avail ourselves more to some of the technology reports that the tribes have inside. I think that makes a great deal of sense. I mean, we don't need to recreate the wheel. And if there's reports made available to us, we should, on behalf of you, be taking a look at those.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Shields. And it sounds like you've got a good grasp on, you know, the reality of this problem that you have to deal with. With that, members, any other questions? Well, thank you very much, and
thank
welcome.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to call Mr. Tom Barrett. And Tom, you probably didn't know we were going to do this to you, but if you could give us a little report here, too, on the gambling report you have with us here, and let us know what's happening in your world.
In the world. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tom Barrett, the director of the Gambling Control Board. What we provided ahead of this meeting or releasing at this meeting are two reports. One, a regular annual report that depicts all the activity that took place the past fiscal year relative to lawful charitable gambling. But then also, more importantly, a report that came out of the last legislative session that addressed some of the concerns expressed in the program evaluation done by the legislative auditor in terms of what the charities were spending their money on, how they were spending the money on. And so we worked with the industry to come up with what I thought was a simple format, one page, that describes what information we're looking at. And we had nearly all organizations report, send us the information. It took a few calls. And I think after all was said and done, there's about 20 organizations that didn't get the report to us on the time we had asked for. But the report that's in front of you is very detailed. It is literally identifies every licensed organization with the exception of those 20 for the past fiscal year on how they, what was their gross receipts, what was the prizes paid, what were their expenses, what were the expenditures related to true charitable contributions, and then what was spent on other lawful purposes. And I just want to give a brief overview of maybe some of the highlights, and then I understand I might come back at a later date for a more in-depth review, but very happy that the majority of the organizations are doing a good job when it comes to charitable gambling. This report did give us an opportunity to highlight some organizations that are not doing a very good job and need some attention. But it does focus on what was being critical in the program evaluation, that being what organizations are spending their money on, high expenses in particular. So again, we focused on that aspect. But the feedback we got was mixed. There's a number of organizations that found the report and the completion of the report very helpful. Their eyes were open. It was a simplified report they could take back to their membership and show them how they're doing. At the same time, we heard, geez, what's another form come from the state, and why do we have to fill it out? But we saw importance, as you will see if you read this report in the detail. It does have its merits. It does focus on some of the issues. Example, number of organizations, for whatever reason, didn't know they had not claimed their tax refund on unsold tickets. This report fleshed out that fact. Some organizations, I said, are in trouble, but a number of them point to very good working operations. We tried to keep it simple. It also points to different tax expenditures. By the nature of their activity, high organizations that have high gross receipts will automatically go into what we call a combined receipts tax. So you'll see different percentages of the tax implication for those organizations. Veterans organizations, no news I'm sure to this committee, but 29% of the licensed organizations are veteran. Lawful purposes, some of the numbers that you'll see, total of $121 million was contributed last fiscal year to lawful purpose, the overall category. Of that, $53 million went to what we call charitable, or in the eyes of the legislative changes last year, the true charitable programs, youth hockey, veterans, those kinds of things, fire relief. Nearly $58 million was spent on taxes. So, I just want to give a brief intro. Hopefully that was sufficient enough. It's a good report. It's sorted alphabetically by the organizations. We have available on our website the same report, but we also have another version categorized by city. So if you're interested in a particular geographic area, or if there's another sort you'd like to see, we'd certainly get that out to the committee as well.
Thank you, Director Barrett. Any questions, members, for Director Barrett at this time? Okay, well, then we'll probably keep you there as we proceed here with our agenda. The first bill on the agenda, House File 2908, Representative Seifert, has been pulled. It's believed that that bill will be taken care of in the next bill, which is House File 3194, and that's my bill on lawful gambling, and I'd like to move that before the committee. To put it before the committee, all those in favor signifying by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Passes. And House File 3194 is before us, members. With that, Representative Barrett, do you want to present this bill? This is the governor's initiative. Actually, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'd like to have House Research, Elizabeth Long, do you want to present, tell us what's in this bill? Put you on the spot.
Sure, Mr. Chair. I'll go sort of through the overview and the bill summary, which highlights several aspects of the bill. Basically, it makes a variety of changes to Minnesota lawful gambling laws, including numerous technical and housekeeping changes. Among other things, it authorizes button raffles, permits certain electronic fund transfers between organization accounts, clarifies conflict of interest provisions, and clarifies restrictions on local government fees for conducting lawful gambling. The bill also updates several provisions of current law to reflect the 2005 legislative authorization of electronic bingo devices, linked bingo. Of note, probably, is that this bill makes two changes related to the statutory limit on allowable expense caps or on allowable expenses for lawful gambling organizations. First, it would allow the Gambling Control Board to authorize waivers for certain organizations under specific circumstances that are set forth in the bill. And second, it would allow the board, it would clarify that the board has authority to impose sanctions on organizations that violate those allowable expense caps. Currently, organizations have to repay their gambling accounts for amounts by which they exceed the allowable expense caps, but this would also clarify that the board can also sanction them in addition to them having to repay that amount that they overspend.
Okay, with that, Director Barrick, would you like to add anything to the bill at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a very adequate overview, and I appreciate that. It does. The majority of the bill is technical. There's 10 of the 25 changes affect the conduct of bingo, and that's simply because of the allowance for electronic bingo devices and linked bingo. So I bring your attention to that. There are some other notable changes, as Ms. Long pointed out. There are a couple of issues. We're still working some of the details out with the industry, particularly in regards to a waiver. We heard a lot this past summer from organizations in light of the expense changes, and so there's some allowance to recognize organizations that might exceed their expenses for whatever reason, but we're trying to incorporate unforeseen or unanticipated type expenditures that the board could sit and review. The provision to the integrity of gambling, simply we're following the lottery standards, prohibiting employees of the board or board members from participating in lawful gambling. There's not a problem out there, but it's one of those things that we thought we needed. And then as far as the sanctions, that's another point, a concern with the industry, being up front, we're still talking to them on that. But if an organization overspends, the board should have the clear authority in law to take some actions against those organizations for whatever reason how they overspend. The problem we're having is trying to work out what's the latitude of those sanctions. And I can understand, we don't want to be too harsh, but we want to get the attention. So we're still working that out. And if there's another opportunity, if we do, to come back with some amendments related to that. So,
okay. Well, members, I'll also mention that, Representative Erickson and myself and Representative Heigerken and Otremba held a meeting, too, with Barrett and some other bar owners up north earlier this year. And this bill is certainly, I think, going a long ways to try to remedy some of their problems here. And with Representative Seifert's bill, too, there's been a lot of activity in this particular area and trying to make sure this bill is tweaked a little bit to work for everybody. With that, are there any questions for for Director Barrett here at this time? Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, I understand from what you just said that this is kind of still fluid. I know there had been some discussion. I have participated in discussion with some organizations that were thinking in terms of carry forward that the more reasonable and less vague solution to the problem, other than the ability to grant waivers, for which maybe you can clarify this, but would maybe be to establish a cap or a series of caps that were proportionate to the size of the operation. Are you regarding that still as a possibility?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, yes, that is one of the points we're talking about. What we're dealing with is the way things were set up in history and how organizations were measured in terms of success or expenses. That's where we started to see the problems, where they built up the credit, not actual cash in the bank, but the value of their charitable donations from the beginning that they got in, until such time that that credit was used up and there was not much focus. So the change that we proposed last year and was passed was to narrow that focus down to the 2 year of the license period. Now, there's been a lot of misunderstanding out in the industry in terms of what's going to happen. It hasn't even become effective yet. It's effective July 1st, 2006. And from that point forward, organizations are going to have literally the 2 years to maintain that expense calculation within their operation. The problem we see are those organizations that, for whatever reason right now, are over that percent allowance. And that report that we handed out clearly identifies those organizations that are over right now. That's been the focus of our attention. Now, to the point that we would consider a cushion, because I've heard that word, you know, for the good organizations that have built up, you know, what's their incentive to put more money to the bottom line? Well, hopefully charitable gambling shouldn't be much incentive. Whatever they can do, they can do. But I understand where they're coming from. They've built up, they've managed a good operation. What is the rewards to them? But that is one of the things we're working with the industry on, and certainly can invite members from the industry that are here to address it. The issue is, how much would we go if we go? There's talk of numbers. We allow a dollar amount. There's organizations that are very big in terms of operation, and there's orgs that are very small. So in that sense, a flat dollar amount wouldn't work, but maybe a percentage. So we're trying to work that out. Hopefully we can. But I think for what's before us today, to go forward and bring things in, we didn't have a waiver last year, but recognizing some of the instances with the charities, the problems they had in front of them, where they had a new site and they had to purchase some polecat booth, a capital expense that under current rule doesn't allow them to depreciate like a normal business would. So there's some latitude granted for those accounting transactions to allow them to exceed if approved by the board. But it is one thing that we're looking at.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Barrett, I'm glad to hear that. And one other question related to the same section of the bill. And that is a question of penalties or sanctions. What do you envision in that regard? Do you have definitions, or is this just, you know, we'll do whatever we want here?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would stop short of saying we do whatever we want. I know we've been accused of that in the past. But yet we see some organizations that are in trouble. And what will it take to get their attention? And yet, a case-by-case basis, we could have two organizations that are in similar problems. One comes in before the compliance review group and has taken corrective actions. They've done changes. And they'll actually look and say, they're good to go. They might be issued a small fine. Another organization, same kind of problem, but might not have taken action or steps. And so the board does have some discretion as far as the sanctions and the penalties. So I'm stopping short of saying it's clearly defined, and I would stop short of saying we should do this in law. The provision that is one of the proposed amendments, if we get there, is to, by rule, incorporate more of a descriptive thing of some of the sanctions. But I'll tell you, there's some orgs that are just, it's hard to get their attention. We don't want to see an organization shut down, stop money going to the youth programs, those things. But $1.4 billion industry, and they need to take it seriously. And so there is that authority that the board would have. But mindful of those sanctions, good example. We had last year legislative changes pertaining to illegal gambling. The old days, if there's illegal gambling, sports boards, whatever, taking place, undoubtedly the board would take action against the charity, even though they might not have really had a hands-on part in that. The provisions we did, we went back to the bar owners, or the ones that are involved in illegal, and said, you know what, we're not going to penalize the charity, we're going to penalize you and allow the charity to live there rent-free for a period of time. Those kinds of things where the board's taking a fresh look in terms of how do we correct the behavior and what is the penalty that gets passed on to the charity. So, in terms of sanctions, depending upon the situation, it is a case-by-case, but it's something we're looking at. The opportunity of the sanctions that we impose are severe, they have an appeal process. They can go to the administrative law judge eventually. and we hope to, you know, head off those things. So we try to dole out reasonable penalties, but the point of getting their attention and correcting the bad behavior, that's what our goal is.
As far as I think it's important to know, too, that you also have the authority to decide what is a qualifying event for the waiver. And I think that that's a good thing, too. You know, it's a good tool to have, and it's something we certainly can measure in the future. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Mr. Barrett, the use of the button, I know it's permissive for raffles. That come from our constituency, or is that an idea coming from the Gambling Control Board just for some kind of, again, clarity that this is a raffle?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson. Again, I appreciate the allowed ability to clarify. How many have bought a button at a local civic festival?
Mm-hmm.
It's illegal. But recognizing that we have bigger things that we're after, but we did some legislative changes last year, the duck races,
mm-hmm.
allowance for a certificate of participation. So in light of that, we said instead of, let's just find a fix. The problem was with the legislation that was passed last year, it prohibited you, a player, from buying anything other than the certificate or the ticket itself. So the allowance of a nominal button number, it's a good thing. So you can go, if it passes, you can buy button raffles.
Okay, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak in favor or against this bill? Mr. King, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you represent.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm King Wilson, the executive director of Allied Charities of Minnesota, a trade association that represents groups that do charitable gambling. I just want to acknowledge that the bill, as it's before you right now, we have identified three main areas of concerns. These are things that we have talked to the chair and Mr. Barrett about. I know we're actually working together to try and come up with some language that I think will be better. My understanding is, you know, and there will be at some point an amendment to that effect. Primarily language in Section 6 dealing with the waiver, Section 10 dealing with the sanctions and penalties, and in Section 22 language about no activity. Rather than belabor at the point, I think it's something that is an ongoing discussion. Fortunately, our negotiations aren't quite as fractious as the NFL players and owners. So I think we are making ground, and we're not walking out on each other and saying it's over. Also, I do want to acknowledge the Seifert bill that's not being here today. I know a number of you, as Representative Hilty said, you know, are having some discussions of coming up with something. The waiver is a step in the right direction. We don't think it goes far enough, again, for these many groups that built up over the years and did good jobs, finding something that is a middle ground. And we actually, after this meeting, hope to sit down with Mr. Barrett, and I've got a new idea that I think maybe will get us both where we need to be and get all of us where we need to be. As we identify these issues and work forward at the next step, hopefully we'll have some fixes that will have cleared up our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, members, for Mr. King? Okay. In hearing none, then, we'll ask for a vote here. We're going to be, I'll renew my motion, which actually is to move House File 3194 onto the full regulated committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Thank you, members. Okay, with that, the next bill order for today will be House File 3099. And members, this is a bill that deals with a lot of different, or a couple of different issues, I guess, that are pretty big in our wonderful society right at this time. What I'm going to ask probably is just to allow me a little bit of time here just to say one of the reasons that I'm coming forward with this bill. And there's a couple of things that are going on in society right now currently that are really hard for us to all handle. I mean, that deal with a lot of different things. The streamlined sales tax and the internet, I guess, is the biggest thing. I think that, you know, the federal government's trying to decide, you know, some way to get a handle on these things, and this is something that, you know, we're certainly not involved with. But at the gambling level, it's our job here to regulate gambling. That's one of the things that we're supposed to do. And to some extent, we can't regulate something we can't get a hand on. And gambling's occurring on the Internet, you know, it's expanding at a rapid rate. People are gambling, playing blackjack, poker, numerous games, betting on horses on the internet, currently in our state illegally. And this bill is going to seek to maybe have us take a look at making parimutuel betting legal off track here in Minnesota. And just because people are doing something illegally doesn't mean that we should make it legal. There are many things that people do illegally that, you know, and just because they're doing that, like I say, we shouldn't make that legal. But parimutuel betting is something that is legal here in the state of Minnesota. And this is occurring, and it's come to our attention that the parimutuel betting outfit here, which occurs at Canterbury Park, is losing a significant amount of money. I believe it was $6 million that they attribute to off-track illegal parimutuel betting. So that's one of the reasons or the purpose for this bill. With that, members, I have asked Elizabeth Long, too, to do a real quick bill summary. And if you would do that this time, Elizabeth, we'd appreciate the help.
Where's Pete?
Mr. Chair, this bill authorizes the Racing Commission to allow entities conducting parimutuel betting at licensed Minnesota racetracks to accept wagers electronically to the extent that that's permitted by federal law. A licensee accepting electronic wagers could be reimbursed by out-of-state vendors who accept wagers on televised races. When a licensee receives money from such an out-of-state vendor, a fixed amount, a percentage of the amount received, would be set aside for purses, and 10% of that amount would go to the Breeders' Fund. This bill also eliminates the current statutory restrictions on the number of card club tables that can be used for play at a card club, which is currently 50 tables.
Thank you, Ms. Long. And then, members, too, I forgot to move this bill. I'd like to move House File 3194 to be passed. And
no, 3099.
I'm sorry, House File 3099 to be passed and sent on to the full Regulated Industries Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye to put it before us. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Okay, thank you. Mr. Colt. Did I get that right either? I didn't get that either. Welcome to our committee.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Court Holt, and I represent the Minnesota HBPA, which is the organization that represents thoroughbred owners and trainers of thoroughbred racehorses in Minnesota. With me is Karen Offerman, who's a board member of Canterbury Park. Before I get into this, I want to just add a personal thought. You had Mr. Shields up here earlier, and I've followed his career for many years. I want to assure you that we really have a high-quality individual in that post right now with his agreeing to take that position. If you work with him, you'll come to understand that. Unfortunately, his credentials are hard to hold on to, so I hope we can hold on to him. The bills that are here today that have been endorsed by the horse industry are all designed to take existing activities and change the regulation of those or impose regulation on them in a way that will allow the horse racing industry to enhance its revenue stream. In effect, it's a way of us subsidizing ourselves, and we are not asking for money. The bill that's in front of you today, you'll hear argument against it in terms of this is authorizing internet or electronic wagering on horse racing. That's not exactly accurate. If you read the bill, it refers to the extent authorized by federal law and not prohibited by statute. In other words, what the federal government has already made legal and what Minnesota hasn't specifically outlawed, we would be allowed to do two things, which I'll get into in a second. The reason for that is in 1978, Congress enacted the Interstate Horse Racing Act. In 2001, Congress amended that law and provided for interstate electronic wagering. They recited their intent that this law apply throughout the land, thus specifically using the Commerce Clause. There's an argument about that, whether it's legal for Minnesota residents to participate in this activity. The Racing Commission has received advice, I believe, from the Attorney General's office that it is not, and therefore Canterbury Park, which is our horse racing venue, is not participating in this activity, and that leaves us in the following situation. There is tremendous involvement throughout the United States, including in Minnesota, of horse racing fans using this means to bet on horse races and now watch those races. That is happening today. There's nothing that you will do today, next Tuesday, or this May that will create that situation. It already exists. What we are not doing is we are not corralling, no pun intended, any of this revenue. It costs thousands and thousands of dollars to breed a horse and get it ready to go to a racetrack. Half of them that are bred for that purpose never even make it to the track. It has cost the track people millions of dollars for this facility and to operate the facility and to employ all the employees. And yet, people with a bank of computers and very little investment are siphoning off all of this revenue presently, and they haven't got a dime invested in Minnesota breeding industry. That's our money that's flying out of this state. The other thing that the present situation does is it provides no protection for Minnesota residents who are participating in this activity. If I guarantee you that if you have an internet account opened up in Honduras, and when the Kentucky Derby comes along, if you were to win the National Pick 7 and win $500,000, when you called that number in Honduras for your $500,000, they wouldn't exist anymore. They'd be on another website. There's no protection for our people for that. And what this bill would do is similar to, if you have this document in your packet, there are 37 states in the United States that have authorized horse racing and that are actually conducting it. Of those 37 states, 31 of those states have authorized for their racing industry either OTB or Racino, or both OTB and Racino, or both of those things and other things, including the very successful experiment just to the south of us in Iowa. Only 6 states out of the whole country are in our position. 4 of those states, their horse racing industry is in the tank. Kansas runs about 30 days now. Nebraska used to have a nice track called Exarban. It's now a commercial real estate development area. You can say what you will about Minnesota. We continue to teeter on the edge. We've fought tooth and nail to keep our heads above water, and we continue to do so. The only other state is Texas, and I don't know how long that situation will last there. You can't say that Texas is in the tank, but that state has one of the highest populations in the United States, money, more horses than any other state in the United States, and their horse industry is a puny horse industry compared to what it should be. Texas should be up there with Kentucky and Florida and New York. Now, what we're talking about actually in all of these bills today is to try to go from one of the six states to one of the 31 states. That's what it's all about. In your packet, we ran off. I had to do it on a color copy. It took forever. This is just a sampling of what you can, at a touch of a button, pull up and start wagering on today. We had a computer here. We could do it right now. Interestingly enough, if you look at the last page, we just ran the phrase online horse race betting. We got 195,000 hits. There are basically two kinds of companies, and there's two provisions in this bill, and that's important to know because I don't know if any of the representatives of those companies are here today, and my remarks are not directed towards them. We have about three or four companies that have taken the federal law and have structured their operation within the confines of the federal law. They are working with racetracks around the United States. They are working with racing commissions around the United States. They have met with our racing commissions, have met with us. And they are trying to operate here in the United States and totally within the law. Those are companies like TVG and YouBet.com. And then there are the other companies. And they operate on one of two bases. One basis is in the internet, you people in another state, there's no nexus. You have no authority over it. Your laws don't mean anything. The other basis, which is getting bigger all the time, is we're not even in the United States. We're in Belize, we're in Honduras, we're in the islands, and the island of Antigua has sued the United States for its Wire Act policy and won in the world court. So that's the legal structure. How big is this? YouBet.com in the last 3 years has increased its sales by 323%. TVG by 161%. Here in Minnesota, it's finally starting to hit home. We are now having the first significant loss of simulcast revenue. That money comes out of my people's hides. There's less money to breed horses, to pay trainers, and we don't have the money to lose in the first place. The last thing that the bill does, and this was around last year, it gets rid of the unfortunate restrictions that were put in the original card club bill on tables and tournaments. The natural restriction that exists in the real marketplace is certainly adequate if you want a restriction. The Canterbury Card Club can only serve the consumer base that shows up. However, they cannot presently serve that. And the only thing that the restriction does is make many people who maybe have driven a long ways very angry when for no reason at all they have to stand around and wait for 3 or 4 hours or leave and go back home. Now, there are, I believe, eight of the 11 compact entities now have card rooms. But in addition to that, Texas Hold'em is being played in every bar in the state. And there's tournaments every day. So these restrictions on Canterbury Park, which is the highest regulated entity you have, simply don't make sense anymore. And that's costing us money as well. So what Mr. Westerberg's bill does is it would allow Canterbury to be a host or a hub for Minnesota residents so they don't have to go outside of Minnesota. Some people say we've already lost that market, that TVG and UBET and those other two have already occupied the marketplace, and that may be true. So that's the second provision of the bill, says, well, if we can't get a piece of this market, these companies are willing to pay a source market. It's like compensation for losses to our industry. Presently, we can't even accept that money when it's voluntarily offered. The Westerberg bill would allow that. And those are the things that would be changed under this bill. We know it's controversial. And if it gets anywhere, it's got a long road to go. But we're willing to work on it as hard as we can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Holton. Ms. Opperman, would you like to add anything to the testimony?
I think Mr. Holton did a very good job. My name is Karen Opperman. I'm first and foremost a horseman. I've raced horses at Canterbury every year since the track opened. I'm on the board of directors, and also today from Canterbury with me are Eric Hallstrom, who's our vice president of Paramutual and Racing Operations, and Mr. Jerry Fuller, who's vice president of our card club operations. So we're available for questions if anyone has any.
Okay. Members, before we take any questions here, I'd just like to mention, too, in the testimony, one of the things that I also considered that I didn't hear anything about just was on the consumer safety part of it. You know, I recognize the fact that they, you know, certainly run the risk of this offshore stuff of not being able to collect winnings. But I'm also concerned about their privacy and their identities when they're using credit cards on these types of things, too, for these types of locations that certainly could be misused. With that, members, are there any questions for the panel here before us or at this moment? Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is really a question for you as the author of the bill. And a couple of things. I think Mr. Holton had made the argument, as did you just a moment ago, that somehow there's an element of consumer protection here. What strikes me as kind of odd. I mean, wouldn't we expect people to know better than to pay money to some entity that probably won't be there the next day? That people, you know, if you extend that reasoning to other kinds of foolish things people do, you know, we would be legalizing a lot of things that we might be sorry for.
I agree with you, Representative Hilty, and that's why, you know, in particular, I'm not trying to do that, you know, to control and regulate everything, but this is an activity that is legal to do in the state of Minnesota. Paramutual betting is. And so, but people are doing this, you know, in a manner that is not legal, and so that's why I'm trying to correct that part of it.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's not only not legal, but it seems to me to be highly risky and somewhat foolish for people to be doing this. I mean, it can't be both ways either. You know, if it's cutting into legitimate wagering because it works, then that's one thing. But, you know, it can't be doing that at the same time that people are being scammed. So I guess there's kind of a question of which actually is occurring. But, you know, beyond that, I guess the question I really have is, how does any of this advance the common good? You know, what's the redeeming social benefit from this?
Well, I think the common good, you know, besides the consumer part of it that we've talked about already, you know, and the things that Mr. Holton has, you know, brought forward is that the horse racing industry and the horse owners and the track, you know, would certainly benefit from money that's leaving our state that we're not able to, you know, participate in, and thereby the state would certainly not be able to participate in revenue that would come forth, you know, from this activity too, by it being a licensed operation. One of the other driving factors for me, Representative Hilty, is considering some of the information that I've gotten from research here has been in the fact that back in 94, you know, when we looked at doing this before, some of the things that were comments that were made back then as far as, you know, they agreed, the Supreme Court agreed in the constitutional amendment part of here that that this is not expressly prohibiting off-track betting, yet they couldn't, you know, allow it to happen based on the fact that they didn't want to interpret the law broader than what the word on-site meant. But they did make some notifications here. They urged consideration in the fact that technology has improved substantially since, you know, that law was passed. And they referenced the fact that the economic climate and the gambling attitude had changed substantially over a period of time. And in 1994, when that when it was on the ballot for voters, it failed. But there were a total of 1,680,000 votes cast. 1,680,000 votes cast. And it failed by 7,000 votes. So even back in 1994, this was certainly something that was something that people were really, you know, undecided on. And I think that because of the advancements today with technology on the Internet, it certainly warrants us taking a closer look at it. So that's, I don't know if that helps you understand why I'm trying to do this. Any other questions for Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. I just wanted everyone to know that the state of Minnesota spent $1,600 to send Representative Atkins and me to San Diego in January to attend the National Council of Legislators from gaming states. And one of the main themes...
Oh, did that. Oh, sorry.
I think that came out of your budget, sir. But I know Representative Atkins and I spent more than $800 each to go to that conference, but we were, I think, glad that we could have this experience. And one of the handouts and one of the emphasis was on technology and how gambling is changing. And I just want to share with you that the market inevitabilities in this industry will expand, that the domino effect is in full motion, and these folks from Canterbury know that, that this is, gambling is now a form of entertainment. And it might not be my entertainment, but it is the entertainment of many folks. And as far as the technological inevitabilities, the industry will more rapidly adopt technology from outside of gaming. And that's why I mentioned wireless before, because Representative Atkins and I learned how Nevada is moving into the wireless part of the industry. Customers will be more comfortable with new experiences. Canterbury is trying to afford a new experience to its customers. Data demand will increase. Security issues will increase and become more complex. And I think we're trying to address that in Minnesota through our regulation. You know, so there's... I think we have to look at gambling as we have it. I tried to get rid of it. I was unsuccessful. And everybody else will be too. So let's look at what we can positively do for our industry and allow competition to proceed, and hold up a high standard for something that I believe this legislature created. I wasn't here at the time, but I know it did. It allowed pari-mutuel betting at Canterbury, and that evolved, and that devolved, and that it evolved again under what I think is a great management now, and we've done things to enhance and to keep the competition even to the extent that we hope we can between Indian gaming and other gaming in the state. And I hope we think about these, because if we want to stay in the 20th century, we will lose. But we've got to move forward in the 21st.
Okay, any other questions or comments, members? If not, we'll ask for any opposition to the bill. If someone would like to speak against. Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. Chairman, may I interrupt?
Representative Zeller.
Interrupt as we're changing seats. I'd like to welcome a fellow legislator from a neighboring state who Representative Lesch and Klinzing and Senator Bachman get to know very well last summer. Senator Richard Brown from North Dakota Legislature is in the audience with us today for the hockey tournaments here. I'd like to give him a warm welcome to our state.
Okay. Mr. McCarthy, why shouldn't we do this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John McCarthy. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. Our association represents 9 of the 11 federally recognized tribes within the state of Minnesota. Those tribes are geographically located in rural communities throughout the state. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to take just a brief comment on a previous statement that was made regarding the regulation issue. While the state's role is very significant in the regulation of tribal gaming, the tribes themselves are the primary regulators. And as primary regulators and as bona fide governments, they have excellent records with no scandals over a period of 16 to 18 years. It's curious to the federally recognized tribes throughout Minnesota, as well as the rest of the country, why there's such an interest in an area where there really is no problem. Minnesota tribes spend over $5 million a year on regulation, with over $250 million being spent by all tribes throughout the country. As mandated by federal law, the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, and as duly negotiated in the tribal-state compacts, the federal, state, and tribal roles are well and clearly defined. The system was well thought out, well designed, and it's working. I believe that one of the misunderstandings arise out of the failure of some to recognize the fact that tribal governments are the primary regulators. Tribal gaming is the most regulated of all gaming industries in the United States. Again, the federal government fully recognized the fact that the tribal governments are, in fact, governments, and just the state governments have every right and capability to regulate themselves. In the case of tribal gaming, there's also oversight by the Justice Department, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the National Indian Gaming Commission, as well as the State Department of Public Safety, and of course, the tribes themselves. The state lottery has no federal oversight. Atlantic City nor Las Vegas have this type of oversight, let alone the millions of dollars expended by the tribes themselves. Clearly, tribal gaming is well regulated, and I would welcome examples where this is not the case. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And moving into the issue at hand, I'm here today to oppose House File 3099. We oppose the bill and others because they establish the groundwork for a major expansion of gambling throughout Minnesota. Proposals that promote private, for-profit gambling expansion put the state on the proverbial slippery slope of turning Minnesota into Las Vegas, which is bad for Minnesota, bad for tribal governments, and the local governments who use tribal gaming revenues to benefit of their tribal members and residents of the rural communities where they're located. I'll keep my testimony very brief. With the permission of the committee, I will direct my comments to the specific bill of House File 3099. We oppose this proposal first because it expands gambling by removing all limits on the number of tables allowed at card clubs. And looking back at the original intent of the card club bills, we believe that the legislature was interested in helping the horse racing industry, not in creating casino-style card clubs with more tables than horses. Second, we oppose this bill because it proposes to authorize Internet gambling in Minnesota. While we appreciate the proponents of this legislation's interest in protecting the assets of Minnesota gamblers, there also could be a case made that this may be viewed as an Internet tax. There's a nationwide concern about what we allow our children to access through the use of the Internet. Appropriately, we try to prevent them from accessing pornography, websites that might attract sexual predators, and access to various sites that promote violence. We further restrain our children from accessing alcohol and tobacco products. With all of this interest in limiting Internet access for potentially dangerous activity, it seems strange that the Minnesota legislature would promote Internet use for expanded gambling opportunities that, like all other Internet activities, will be accessible to Minnesota children. While other states may be followers in the charts that the proponents have laid out, Minnesota is a leader, and they have been consistent in their opposition to Internet gambling. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. So, from your testimony, though, you're assuming that children are not subject to Internet gambling currently?
No, Mr. Chairman, I am suggesting that they are, and why would we want to promote making it legal in Minnesota?
Okay. Questions of Mr. McCarthy? Any Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Mr. McCarthy, Is not your industry expanding?
No, Madam Representative, our industry is not expanding. Our industry is living within the limits of the compact that we negotiated with the state. We do not have new games. We have not done anything outside of the realm of what we were authorized to do when we negotiated.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCarthy, don't you add slot machines frequently to your casinos as the public demands?
Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, our authority within the compact is to operate slot machines within the guidelines as set out, and we do that. The number of machines was not restricted to us, and this is not expanding gambling because of the fact that we are not expanding sites, we are not expanding with outside the scope of the jurisdiction that we were authorized in.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Mr. McCarthy, so Canterbury is a private enterprise. The legislature allowed them to open a card club. We set a limitation, and then the market demanded we lift that limitation. Is that not free market, much like you in the industry that you are helping promote does?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, it's my understanding that the legislature in the state of Minnesota authorized card clubs initially to help the race industry, the horsing industry itself, and it has done that quite adequately. So to do beyond that, in our opinion, is going beyond the scope of what the card club initially intended to do. There is no significant evidence that proves that there is a huge market out there for activities that are being proposed here.
Well, Mr. McCarthy, as far as whether or not it does it adequately or not, as one who has been there to play and has not been able to play, I can testify to the fact that it's not adequate for me anyways. Unfortunately, I waited for many hours and wasn't able to play at all. As far as on the expansion of gambling, you know, for the kids on the internet too, I'm not sure how it's handled globally, but what we'd be proposing here, they'd certainly have to have a credit card in order to operate through a licensed facility with the state of Minnesota. So I think you'd probably get more controls on stuff like that happening that could be occurring today. With that, could you tell me in the gambling or in the Indian casino community, do they do any internet gambling? Or do they operate any internet gambling?
Not in Minnesota, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so nationwide they do.
There have been some instances where tribes have ventured into that arena. I don't know. There are issues in litigation now. I don't know if they have been successful. But they're in other states that have different laws than Minnesota does. But to my knowledge, there is no Indian operation of any magnitude throughout the country.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman Westerberg. Mr. McCarthy, how many of your casinos now have card clubs?
Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I believe 7 of the tribes are operating some form of card clubs, some larger than others. The larger of the casinos, or obviously the largest casino, Mystic Lake, does not have a card club.
No.
And I believe that some of the others are one or two table operations. So I believe it's 7 of the 11.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Mr. McCarthy, if the public demands more card clubs, will there not be more tables at Treasure Island, for example, which I know has an active card club now? Won't you add tables?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, the card club issue is one that is up for debate within the structure of the tribal casinos. Historically, in gambling facilities where machines are offered and or blackjack, they have found that floor space utilized for other activities is less productive. I believe that part of the reason that the tribes have ventured into some of the card room activity is due to the fact that it has been promoted so widely by other venues, and that they may be looking at it to some degree as a lost leader. So I don't know the answer to that question. I believe that they are offering card tables at the present time due to the fact that that there is interest, and they have seen not necessarily a dramatic drop in revenue, but a change in revenue, and that kind of tends to be a wave where it comes and goes. There's also a great deal of interest in card games because of the national television exposure to Texas Hold'em and other issues of that nature. So I think that the vote is out yet on whether or not these are going to be successful. I don't think in the very near future you'll see any major expansion of these facilities or these types of activities at tribal casinos.
Okay, members, with that, as far as I'd like to, Mr. McCarthy, first of all, thank you, too, for your comments when you first began down. You know, we certainly recognize that, you know, there's a need for us to work together, mm-hmm. you know, in the reporting and making sure that these activities, you know, are conducted at the highest possible level, and we certainly appreciate, you know, your comments to that regard. With that, members, is there any other testimony in opposition to anyone else would like to speak? Okay, and not, I'd like to renew my motion to send House File 3099 on to the full regulated committee.
Mr. Chair, I do have a couple questions.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure that we heard from those who wish to testify. The constitutional issue?
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't it be, I'm just curious what your thought was in terms of presenting it in this fashion as opposed to proposing it as a constitutional amendment?
Representative Atkins, my thinking on this is that there's two ways to go on it. You know, you could do it this way, or we could try to amend the Constitution as they tried to do that in the past, but it seems to me like that's just going to be the longer route. And my hope and desire is to, you know, take a shorter track to getting this done, recognizing that it could still be challenged constitutionally. And also, if nothing else, at least calling light to the issue.
Well, can I raise it, Mr. Chair?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you. I raised that issue because if your goal is to do it in the most expeditious fashion, it probably makes more sense to propose it as a constitutional amendment because it then could be on the ballot in 06. You'll then have to wait 2 years before it would be able to go on the Constitution or on the ballot as a constitutional amendment until 08. What's going to happen, I mean, as a constitutional question, this horse is a nag. The bill doesn't go anywhere. We've got precedent that is right on all fours with this very issue, not only by the Supreme Court, but then it was proposed as a constitutional question and got voted down. I would be shocked to see our Supreme Court overturn not only precedent, but then a follow-up vote because of a statute. So my sense is what could happen, you might pass the statute, win a battle, but lose the war, because it then goes before the Supremes, they knock it down, and then you're back to the legislature again, proposing his constitutional amendment for 08, taking effect in sometime in 09, if your goal is really to try to take the shortest course and make it effective as soon as possible, it's probably to seek his constitutional amendment on the 06. And I don't know if I support it or not, but at least from the constitutional point of view and your goal to do it as quickly as possible, that's where it's going to end up, because like some folks around here say, this dog don't run. When it has a statute, it just, I don't think it'll stand up to constitutional scrutiny. My second question is with respect to the governor's position on this. Have you visited with him about whether he supports it?
I have contacted the governor's office, and I have not got a response back on this particular issue as of yet.
Do we have anybody here from the... I didn't see anybody from the governor's office. They were kind of all over us last year. I remember every meeting we had a room full of folks from the governor's staff. But I had heard that that he now opposed it, which used to be his position until he was in favor of it, and then opposed it. And
Representative Adkins, there are certainly many issues that we're talking about here. This is, you know, electronic wagering for pari-mutuel betting, and, you know, last year it was more casinos and racinos and other things that we were trying to do. So this is a small part of that. But actually, this is actually an issue that we didn't even discuss last year as far as electronic. Oh, yeah, we did a little bit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. My point was the gambling expansion. Thank you. The gambling expansion takes place in the second part of the bill, which is unlimited tables in Canterbury. And I think that came up many times last year. It sort of got in the shadows of the racino and other proposals to expand gambling. But I'm just, if the goal is to try to get something done, it'd be nice to know where the governor's office is, because if they're back to opposing it again,
absolutely,
we're all wasting our time as we sit here today.
That's a very good point that you're making, and like I said, I have been in contact with the governor's office. It's just, as of this time, they have not gotten back to me as of yet.
And if I might,
Representative Atkins,
my suggestion, and then I have just one other question. My suggestion would be that we just simply invite them. We got something that was, it didn't make it into the state of the state this year. It was a kind of the prima donna, or the 800-pound gorilla of the state of the state last year. But I didn't hear mention of it this year. Is that it might be nice to just invite them to come and visit with us. And I understand we're going to continue this hearing to, is it the 14th? So there's certainly another opportunity for them to get a bite at the apple and tell us whether or not we're running around this track for no reason, or whether it makes sense.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think he's reached his horse analogy limit.
Oh, no, I got several left.
There's just, I can't now take it anymore. One would say he's beat that horse.
Another good one.
Well, all I know is the governor is as unpredictable as a roulette table. The only other question I have is, there's in other gambling expansion bills, I think particularly acute to the card club, not to mention the racino and others, but there was a provision for some income to the state, was one of the things that was pushing it. And I looked at it quickly, and maybe it's in between the lines, but is there any income to the state that would come as a result of this?
Representative Atkins, it certainly would be, because simply by taking these limits off the tables, they would still have to function under the law in its entirety for the operations of the card tables.
Okay,
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The follow-up, I thought that the last time it was proposed, there was specifically an additional tax that was going to be proposed along with it. Is my memory just fading?
No, I think, Representative Atkins, I think you're correct. That was in a different proposal. And certainly this proposal doesn't address that part of the issue at all, but we'd entertain an amendment, you know, if you decide to add an amendment to do that at any point in time, too.
That's something we could support?
With that, members, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have one brief question. On the question of the, on page one of the bill, line 1.20, question of the percentage of reimbursement set aside to be used for purses, that percentage is left blank. I understand why I have a blank in some circumstances when we're talking about dollars that have to be negotiated, but here it seems to me that there could be a percentage anticipated and put in the bill. I was wondering, first of all, why there isn't a figure there, and second, what figure had you anticipated?
To answer this, I'll ask Mr. Holton to come forward.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilke, I didn't quite get all of that
What lines were you looking at in the bill?
1.20 in section 2 on page 1. Question of the percent of the reimbursement received that's set aside to be used for purses.
The reason that is blank, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, the reason that is blank is because that is typically a subject matter that is handled by agreement between the track on the one side and the horse industry on the other side, and then either blessed or modified by the legislature. And to the extent that this bill were to travel, you know, we're fully aware that there's another body across the street, that would be resolved well in advance of that. Consistent with the other agreements that we have made that have been put into statute regarding the threefold percentages on simulcast wagering, the range of percentage that presently exists in card club, and then the chiseled in granite paramutual in season 8.4%. I believe that the track needs to get a little bit better idea, and I know that we do, on what kind of reimbursement that's going to be, but we are talking about a small amount of money. So it's not, if this was the simulcasting bill that we passed 15 years ago, there would be, you know, there it would be ironclad. But what you're looking at in terms of these source market payments is pocket change. Better than nothing.
Oh, Mr. Halton, in following up on Representative Hilty's question too, now in the bill, you know, it's because it says it's going to be treated in the same manner as simulcasting. It would be the exact same, wouldn't it?
The Mr. Chairman, I believe that that subdivision 10 on lines 1.8 through 1.12 is in fact paramutual wagering. So as the bill lays out, that would simply be added to the existing income stream that takes place when a person is standing in front of a paramutual window. The section 2, the new subdivision 11, is a different kind of income, and depending on what the arrangements are between the, this would be an out-of-state vendor, that would be a different, and it really, the issue there is who's losing the most, because there's a Minnesota market, and then there's Minnesota horses, and then there's Minnesota market that is wagering on non-Minnesota horses. So, but when you go through the paramutual stream, that's all set up. That's, you know, 8.4 in season and different rates out of season. Goes to the breeders' fund, goes to the paramutual tax. That's all. That's plug and play.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, with that, members, I'll renew my motion to send House File 3099 on to the full regulated committee, where we will certainly do everything we can to get the governor's input on that particular bill for our committee. With that, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No. No.
The ayes have it.
Division, Mr. Chair.
Passes. Division has been called. All those seeking, voting in favor of, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. And all those opposed, please raise your hand.
4.
What do you get?
Five.
No. Well, that's called a tie, folks, and that basically means it doesn't prevail. And so the motion to pass House 3099 has been defeated. Thank you, members, and thank you for your time. We certainly appreciate it on that bill. With that, members, I would like to bring forward House File 3100. Representative Beard, would you please come to the table and tell us about your bill?
He came.
Representative Beard, welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Representative Mike Beard from District 35A, which is Shakopee Prior Lake. I'm proud to tell you that Canterbury Park, to which this bill applies, is right in the heart of my district and one of our good corporate and civic citizens. House File 3100, somewhat related to a topic we discussed last year at length, card club enhancements. We've heard a little bit about the card clubs here this morning. The bill that I'm carrying this morning, 3100, would lift the restrictions on the number of tables allowed to Canterbury Card Club and allow Canterbury to conduct additional poker tournaments during the year. Currently, they're only allowed one tournament per year. It also allows Canterbury to offer banked card games like the games played at the casinos. This is a significant change from the bill I carried last year, but we'll talk about that here in a few moments. It would also allow the use of electronic poker tables and individual video games, video poker machines at Canterbury. And I would stress that these are not slot machines. These are electronic video machines that do introduce the element of human decision that affect the outcomes of the game. The card club will continue to be monitored and regulated by the Minnesota Racing Commission. This is important for us to note. The Racing Commission must approve any request for additional tables. It must approve the separate plans for banked or unbanked card games should the race track decide they want to go in that direction. This bill is a modest effort to keep Canterbury as a viable force in the face of increasing competition from other venues, some of which have been noted here this morning. The internet business, the tribal casinos, and the Texas Hold'em tournaments that have been encroaching on the viability of Canterbury's card clubs. You know, the original purpose of the card club legislation was to improve the horse racing industry by improving the purses, attracting higher quality horses and more horses to Minnesota. I think there was wisdom in that, a great degree of wisdom in that decision by the legislature back in 1999. That industry touches a lot more lives than just straight pure gambling does. It actually affects the agriculture industry, the equine industry, veterinary medicine, feed mills, farm implement dealers, and so on and so forth, not to mention the heart of my district, the Canterbury Racetrack. No additional taxes or fees were imposed on the card club other than this uniquely free market American thought that if we enhance the profitability and viability of veterinarians, horse breeders, farmers, equipment dealers, and so on and so forth, the tide would come in and more revenue would accrue to the government because people were living profitable and prosperous lives and running profitable businesses in their communities. That, I think, is probably the best social policy we have to encourage economic policy so that everybody wins. Whether or not somebody wins at the card table is almost beside the point. People that are racing for the horses spread the money around through what I call real jobs and real economic activity. And I like that. I think that's good for all of us. At the moment, 15% of the card club revenues go to horse purses. That's more than is required by law. And that, I think, speaks to the excellent working relationship between the track owners themselves, and there's almost 3,000 owners in Canterbury Park, and the Horsemen's Benevolent Protective Association and the Quarter Horse Association. When I was on city council in the early 90s, these people didn't even like each other. It was hard to get them to sit still and talk to one another. Since Canterbury Holding Company has taken over and the management and leadership that runs Canterbury Park today, they're actually good people. I tip my hat to them that they brought, I hate to use this term, peace to the valley because it's done to death. But now we've actually got people in all three associations that get along, that see that they're working for the common good, and they're actually doing good things for each other by going beyond what the statutes require and putting a little more revenue than necessary to the, or what's required to the horse purses. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think I'm going to withhold the balance of my remarks until we get into discussion, because you know how I like the discussion. And I do have a couple of witnesses that would like to speak. I see my friend Court Holton back here from the Benevolence Association. He has a few remarks. And then I think we're going to have, is it Kevin Childress going to speak from the Quarter Horse Association?
Okay, Representative Beard, before we allow your testifiers to speak here, we just want to move House File 3100 before our committee here with the intent to pass it on to the full regulated committee.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
And Mr. Holton?
Mr. Chairman, members, this bill, again, is a bill designed to enhance revenue in the horse racing industry. It, to use my friend Mr. McCarthy's words, it is an activity that exists at Canterbury Park now, and it would remain within the same site, that being Canterbury Park. Presently, card playing is conducted there, as you all know. It's done in a, what they call an unbanked format, which means you strictly play, one player plays against another player, or actually nine players at a time play against each other. The house takes a percentage, which is referred to as a rake. This is very popular for a lot of people. They enjoy this contest with other contestants. Some people, however, are less happy with that kind of confrontational activity and prefer something that is a little bit more based on luck, because in unbanked cards, you know, the typically the best player is the one that wins, and when you win the whole pot. Other people would prefer that you could win without having to win the whole pot or beating every other player, and that you weren't so confrontive. And for them, this bill would allow two things. One is a table just exactly like we have today, where the people playing cards would be playing against each other just like they are today, except there would be no, instead of a dealer and actual cards, you'd have a computer and a screen for each player, and that's how you would play. The other machine would be the standalone machine, otherwise known as a video poker machine. This is even less confrontive because you're now by yourself. You play poker. Typically, it's a limited number of games. For instance, you have a five card draw. Oftentimes, you have to have jacks or better to win something. And the better hand you have, you can win more. You have to make decisions. You have to discard. You have to pick the right cards. So your decisions do have an impact on the outcome. It's not at all the skill level of real poker, because there are a number of items missing. For instance, betting strategy is not part of video poker. Reading your other players is not part of video poker. Bluffing is not part of video poker. So it is rather limited, and that is attractive to more people. You get the other advantages of a computer in terms of mistake-free and things like that. So it would be a different way of playing cards at Canterbury. This bill also, for the reasons stated before, would eliminate the table limits and tournament limits. One thing I forgot to add before is that the horse racing industry in Minnesota is a critical part of what the University of Minnesota has said is a billion-dollar agricultural industry. And we're the only gambling-related industry that actually produces a valuable product other than paper tabs or plastic chips. And there's another bill that would be heard today if that were to pass and subsequent legislation were to pass. We still intend, if we get that far, to build a major add-on, which would be for non-racing horses, of which there is a larger interest in this state even than the racing horses. And so that would add, for the people of Minnesota, yet another dimension. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holden. Are there any questions, Representative Hilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Holden, I need you to clarify for me how using electronic images at a table works. I understand video poker. That's a sort of, to me, the same thing as taking a Labrador Retriever and calling it a horse. Not to call that activity poker. But as far as the sitting at the table with the computer, I'm having difficulty envisioning how that works, or, you know, how players interact. Can you explain that a little bit further?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Healthy, I believe so. This is a new, it's a not necessarily new technology. It's a new design on existing technology. It would work pretty much the same as if you were sitting there today. Instead of cards, let's say you're playing Texas Hold'em and you get two aces. Instead of you picking it up and looking at, there would be two aces on your screen, coverable. And then if you stayed for the flop on everybody's screen, the three flop cards would come out. Instead of taking chips and pushing them into the pile, you'd touch a number on your station and push bet, and that would subtract from your amount and add to the pot. And when it was all over, the players that were still in after the river card and the final bet, and you're the winner, let's say, your number on your machine would go up by that much. And now you'd have more. And at the end, there's a variety of ways where you print out what you got left. You take it to the window just like you do now. Instead of giving them chips, you give them this printout, and they give you your money. So it's still player, 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 you know, bet, bet, raise, drop, call. It's just done with the machines. And I don't necessarily disagree with you about the Labrador and the horse on the video poker. All of these, none of these machines are, appeal to me. But I almost would rather be forced to watch a Tom Cruise movie than play a slot machine all day long. But I am in the vast minority. I can tell you that this entertainment, you know, those of us.
Okay. Any other questions?
I do have another witness. Another question, Paul.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and tell us who you represent.
My name is Kelvin Childers, and I'm president of the Minnesota Quarter Horse Racing Association. And I guess I'm here today on behalf of the horsemen. When the track opened in 85, there was a big boom for the state. I was fortunate enough to buy my first horse in 1990. And if you're aware of horse racing, two more years when it's eligible to race was the last year that Canterbury actually conducted races before it went dark in 93 and 94. So I had the distinct pleasure to send all my horses out of state to run for the first 2 years that I was in this business. Since then, the tracks reopened, the advent of the card room, we've been able to maintain, I'll say, reasonable purses up to this point. As we looked at the list of states, our purses aren't nearly where any of our adjoining states, be it Iowa, be it Oklahoma, other places that we might race, are at today. We're probably at about half of where those states are at. So on behalf of House File 3100, these are attempts to directly impact and help the horsemen stay above water and select to run horses and keep horses here in Minnesota. That without them may put us back to where we were at in 93 and 94.
Thank you. Any questions, members, for the testifiers? Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question, but I do have some information that, you know, just to show where Canterbury is in regard to other states. The West Virginia tracks in 2004, total win was $854.9 million, Delaware $553 million, Rhode Island $383 million, Iowa tracks $337 million. And New York has dropped a little bit, and New Mexico's at, it hasn't dropped, actually. It had a very huge increase in tax receipts, but $192 million doesn't seem very much for New York. But, you know, they still got a lot in taxes. New Mexico, $149. I mean, that's just the total win.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify against the bill?
Are you trying to get someone to back?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, my name is John McCarthy. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. I would suggest to my good friend, Mr. Holton, that I do agree that the play of traditional card games is an activity that currently is taking place at the Canterbury facility. However, our agreement ends there. The proposal that is before you today is a totally new activity that requires additional state approval for expanded gambling. Tribal gaming or the tribes that have gaming negotiated certain activities in 1989 and 1990. Since that time, we've not come to the state one single time to ask to change those activities. Therein lies the major difference. The expansion issue is not one that we really need to deal with. What we're dealing with in regard to Canterbury and the other proposals that are before you certainly require additional legislative activity to approve additional games, additional issues. So I want to kind of make that clear. In regard to the specifics of House File 3100, we oppose the bill because, again, it promotes a major expansion of gambling within the state. While this bill is carefully crafted, the bill is simply another version of Slots at Canterbury. I mean, that's what it is. Authorizing banked card games represents a major shift in public policy within our state. The proposal attempts to redefine what we commonly understand as traditional card games. The bill authorized, and I quote, "banked card games may be conducted using tangible cards or by electronic images at a table with other players or at an individual station," end of quote. In the gaming industry, an individual station refers to a gaming station occupied by a gaming device, usually a slot machine. The bill goes even further as it also removes all limits on the number of tables. This equates to unlimited slots at Canterbury. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mr. Berg. Mr. McCarthy, a year ago when we were debating all these hot issues, I recall that Mystic Lake had a full-page ad talking about opening a card club. What happened to that card club?
I believe, Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, I believe that there was some discussion at Mystic Lake. I don't know the specifics. I'm not a member of the inside group at Mystic Lake. But my understanding was and is that they deferred their card club for financial reasons and to not change their philosophy on being opposed to helping the horse industry. And a card club at Mystic Lake, while it's not out of the question, at that time, and I believe at the present time, would probably represent a major competitive issue between Canterbury and Mystic Lake. Again, I can't speak on behalf of them for those specific types of decisions, but that has been my understanding. However, as you know, this is an ongoing situation. When the card club was approved initially, there was some understanding, written or unwritten, that that was going to help the industry. It was going to increase the purses, and for that reason, while we didn't support it, we certainly didn't actively fight it. But that understanding also contained the assumption that that would be enough, and that once the industry started to get on its feet, that that would be helpful. So, but then we see practically the very next year that Canterbury is back for slot machines. Now we see kind of a situation where it's a side door issue. So whether or not Mystic Lake maintains that position or not, I don't know. But that's what I know about it in response to your question.
Mr. Chair, follow.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Mr. McCarthy, you made the statement that you've not been back to the state to ask for anything else. But I heard Peter Hogan in San Diego talk about Class 2 gaming beginning to look very much like Class 3 gaming. And, in fact, the Justice Department, I know, issued a ruling. I think that they're working it out now with the National Indian Gaming Association. But, you know, to hear that your association would oppose a moving to technology by Canterbury doesn't make sense when the technology of Class 2 gaming is almost, according to Peter Hogan and others in San Diego, impossible to discern from Class 3 technology.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, those issues are beyond the scope, I believe, of what we're talking about. Phil Hogan's concern about the chairman of the National Gaming Commission, his concern about Class 2 as the concern of then Attorney General, U.S. Attorney Tom Heffelfinger, was in relation to other states. It was primarily in relation to states that have not been able to arrive at a compact within their state, like Florida, Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas. And the industry did come up with devices. Keep in mind, and this is an oft misused term, Class 2 and Class 3 issues are only really applied to Indian gaming. They don't apply to the general industry. Now, the general industry is picking up on that because the assumption is, and how it applies to the industry is, that that historically a Class 2 activity did not need a compact. It did not need activity between the tribe and the state, only the Class 3 activities. So as the technology advanced and was developed, devices were put on the market that did resemble and do resemble slot machines. There's a testing mechanism, and this is, again, another point that I think people miss, that tribal gaming goes through to ensure that every device that is put on the floor at a tribal casino in Minnesota is approved per the compact. There's no question about that. So there's no illegal devices. And as far as Class 2 devices in Minnesota, and I understand that there are a couple of tribes who have been experimenting with that, are outside the realm of the compact. And but it doesn't necessarily mean that those kinds of devices would be legal in Minnesota under state law. And it gets a little complicated because the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act is fairly specific in saying that within the boundaries of the tribal lands, tribes have authority to conduct gaming. And at Class 2 gaming, they do without a compact. And so, and I believe that's the issue that's before the Department of Public Safety today relating to the White Earth issue. I don't know a lot about that. That is not something that that our association is involved with. However, I do know that the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act does give some far-reaching opportunities there. I suspect that will be decided through litigation or some agreement. But most of the casinos in Minnesota are not involved with what you would call Class 2 machines. And I don't believe Class 2 machines, as they're perceived in Indian country, would be acceptable devices within the state of Minnesota. based on current law. I hope that answers your question, Representative Harrison.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, with that, members, the chair is going to call a recess for a lunch break here till 1 o'clock. Okay, members, we'll call this meeting back to order. Sorry for the delay. Representative Beard, do you have any final comments here on House File 3100?
You turn up the volume and make a few more comments here. House File 3100, I believe, is a reasonable request, continuing on a tradition of compromise that was reached on behalf of the horse industry, which I might remind the members, is a billion-dollar agriculturally based industry in this state. This wins for on several different levels, and I'd urge that you pass the bill out of this division and send it on to the full committee. Thank you.
Okay, members, is there any other opposition, or I guess we already did that here, right? So with that, I'll renew my motion to send House File 3100 to the Regulated Industries Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion passes, and the bill is sent on its way.
Thank you. Thank you,
Representative Beard. Okay, members, with that, we will... We're going to remove House File 2719. The Erickson bill has been withdrawn, and we'll call House File 3101 to the table. And Representative Zellers will move House File 3101 to be recommended and approved.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
And sent on to the Regulated Industries Committee. So, Representative Biskins, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, House File 3101 provides for a ballot question to be put to the people, and the ballot question in all this mumbo jumbo written on from line 113 to 119 basically says, should we have Racino in the state of Minnesota? And let's put it to the people. Members, I'd appreciate your support on moving this to the full committee.
Okay, Representative Biskins, do you have any testifiers who'd like to speak in favor of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, and now, deference to your time, I don't believe that's necessary, but if you do believe that would be beneficial, we could definitely do that.
Okay. Is there any opposition to the bill? Mr. McCarthy, please state your name again for the tape and tell us who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John McCarthy. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. And I am here to testify in opposition to House File 3101. Deference to my good friend, Representative Biskins, the concept of offering an amendment to the state constitution for the benefit of one private for-profit corporation is outrageous. This bill should actually be called the Canterbury Corporate Welfare Bill, as it affords one private corporation the only license for a period of 10 years. The language giving Canterbury all the advantage is very clear. What's not so clear is the vague reference to other forms of gambling. In its present form, this proposal would be very attractive to any number of major gambling companies, as it is an exclusive opportunity. The stockholders at Canterbury could pretty much name their price, and they probably would get it. Of course, Minnesota would also bring every major gambling company to the state to promote the referendum. These companies could spend millions to sell the concept. PR and advertising companies, TV and radio stations, and newspapers will all make millions from the barrage of advertising that would go out and paid for to pass the initiative. The opponents of expanded gambling will be outspent, outnumbered by at least 10 to 1. Your vote to approve this measure today will set up the classic David and Goliath situation. In the end, we'll be the real winners. Minnesota and our residents will be changed forever, and gambling will rule. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman and many members, I find it very interesting that in the last legislative session, the administration and many of the same legislators who have sponsored the bills before you today spent a great deal of time on the gambling issue.
Legislature was forced into special session due to its inability to disagree on major gambling proposals. I am much surprised to see again this year that this committee already has at least 8 gambling initiatives proposed. I strongly urge members of the committee to reject these proposals and all proposals that will open the door to expanded gambling. I believe that the majority of Minnesotans believe that we have more than enough gambling in our state, and they prefer that the legislators spend less time debating gambling and instead work out more pressing issues like transportation, health care, and education for Minnesota children. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Any other questions from members for Ms. McCarthy? Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. You know, Mr. McCarthy, I've been, you know, on the opposite side of you on these issues for about 4 years. I don't want to be. I want to work together. So tell us today, what can we do as a legislature of the state of Minnesota and the tribes that you represent, all the sovereign governments, what can we do to work together? How can we accomplish something good for the people of Minnesota by working together instead of always at each other's throats on this issue? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I appreciate your kind words and your intention to work together. And I agree that that would be just a marvelous thing that I believe any tribe in our association would embrace. For one thing, I believe that it would be appropriate as a starter for the state of Minnesota and the legislature to recognize and fully appreciate the huge benefit that tribal gaming has been to the state, the economic impact that tribal gaming has had, particularly in rural communities. And, you know, we've had this discussion with others from the top on down. We've talked with the governor of the state of Minnesota. And I believe before his State of the State last year, there were several legitimate, honest proposals brought forward, particularly by the Mille Lacs Band and the Chief Executive Melanie Benjamin, to work together with the state to try to develop some ways that we can collectively enter into partnerships and move forward. What those partnerships would look like, how they would be developed would be interesting to see. The problem I believe that we've had up to this point is that no one has really come forward. Over the years, since practically the day the compacts were, the ink wasn't dry on the paper, there was folks that were out there trying to torpedo it. to identify, excuse me, the fact that the compacts were negotiated in good faith, that they have been a terrific economic impact to the state of Minnesota. They've created jobs, basically over 14,000 jobs without a dime of cost to the state of Minnesota. Yet these tribal operations are treated as pariah. They any other industry, either within the state or outside the state, would be embraced, as you're suggesting, as very valuable to the state. The state has offered, in many cases, companies to come here with all kinds of incentives. So we hear constantly, year after year, these facilities don't pay taxes. These are governments. Governments don't tax governments. That's very simple. It's very easy to understand. But yet, year after year, legislative proposals come forward that demand revenue sharing. The Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, from its outset, mandated that this could not happen, that there was no taxation attached to any of these proposals. So I think that I could go on, but I think that again, to sit down and to, first of all, recognize the great deeds that have occurred as a result of the tribal gaming operations, the great economic impact, that'd be a great starting place. And then to say to the tribes, okay, you know, what is it that we can do together? The state has many problems. They have, particularly in rural Minnesota, we have health care issues. People that don't have health care. Are there things the tribes would be willing to do? Yes, I believe so. And I believe that Chief Executive Benjamin, among others, offered some of that. You've got some other situations that where you've got tribes that are doing well with their gaming operations, which is good for them and the local communities, but they probably don't have a lot left over.
so such as Whiteearth and Red Lake, as you and others have aptly pointed out. But there are tribes that do have some opportunities, and I think that's what would be very welcome to explore.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Berg. You know, Mr. McCarthy, we do recognize the economic development that the casinos have brought to our districts. You know, there are many of my constituents employed at Mille Lacs, and I'm grateful for that. The state, however, continues to send millions of dollars, you know, in aid to the tribes, and so does the federal government. And the question I get asked as I visit with my constituency is, why does that continue to happen, especially, you know, in my area where I do have a wealthy tribe in light of the fact they have two casinos, and I know they provide housing and health care. They do so many wonderful, wonderful things for the Mille Lacs Band. And yet, you know, the people are asking me, why is there still this flow of money? Well, you know, there's going to be, to a certain extent, a state obligation because whether you're a member of the Mille Lacs Band or not, you are a citizen of Minnesota and you are a citizen of the United States. But I think you have to try to understand, too, the dilemma that we face as we get questions, and it's hard to answer those questions, as some of my constituents think that what tribal governments are trying to do is separate themselves from us rather than unite. You know, so I want you to ponder that as much as I'll ponder some of the suggestions you made today.
Mr. McCarthy, do you want to respond to that?
Well, yes, briefly, and again, I appreciate your comments. In relation to your concern or the dilemma, as you point out, there are several, I think, several reasons for that. One is that there are treaty obligations with the federal government. And as you've again pointed out, and I don't propose to speak for the Mille Lacs Band, but and they are doing well. However, just looking at the federal formulas and the state formulas, you have to be at a certain income level to either qualify for that funding or you don't get it. And so obviously the need far outweighs the resources that they have to serve that need. In the case of Red Lake and White Earth, that's very obvious. It may not be as obvious at Mille Lacs, but I remember Mille Lacs, as probably perhaps you do, 20 years ago, housing was not adequate. Healthcare was not adequate. None of the things that they have today were there. They are just building their communities. They're just rebuilding their governments. And that takes a long time. And I think that folks, and there's a huge misconception throughout this country that now, after Indian gaming was organized and started by these tribes, that poverty went away. Well, it didn't. All Indians are not millionaires. A very few Indian people have been fortunate enough to do that well. But the vast majority haven't and are still living in dire poverty. We fight that fight every day, but this was not a magic bullet. This was not a silver bullet that changed all that overnight. And as it changes, I think you see not only changes within the economic status of these tribes, but you also see changes in the social status. That for the first time, many of these folks have had an opportunity to work where there was a barrier to their having that opportunity before. You see families now being able to buy better clothes, better houses, better cars, and upgrade their standard of living. And that's going to be generational. As time moves on, hopefully that's the cycle that you can break with poverty. We've seen that wherever we've gone. But where you don't provide these jobs and you don't provide the housing and the education and health care, it doesn't work. And it's a cycle of welfare. Well, I think what you're seeing is the tribes are breaking that cycle of welfare. And it's not going to happen overnight. And so the needs are still there.
Final comment. But I can't believe that tribes don't believe in free market. And so this idea of an exclusive monopoly, although there's nothing in the compacts that says it's exclusive, but it is a monopoly, would be something that we both would think is okay. And that's just my closing remark.
Okay. Representative Atkins?
Not for Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. McCarthy, I guess I'd just like to say that, I think it's in recognizing the lengthy debates that we've had in the past, you know, on gambling issues and trying to do a partnership with some of the other tribes to, you know, promote
you know, not just a few benefiting from those things was important legislation. And because of the large number of proposals that we have before you today, we're trying to say that things aren't perfect here in the state of Minnesota in the gambling arena. So we are searching for other avenues, you know, to make it better, I think, for the entire state. And that's why this is occurring. I was impressed by your statement here, the tribes would be willing to do something in particular, and I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, but, you know, most people know here for the compacts to be renegotiated, it takes both sides being willing to come to the table to talk about those things. Could you just clarify that for me? Were you implying that the tribes would be willing to do something like that?
Well, I think that the offers have been put forward in the past to get together and talk about it. I'm not suggesting exactly what that would be, but it could and would be something that would represent a partnership where it would be a win-win moving together. In my experience, and this is unfortunate, I believe, but every negotiation that I've ever listened to or talked to, whether it be with the governor or with other groups, pieces of legislation, not particularly this one, but others, have been threatening. It's always a gun in the hand. It's either you do this or we'll do this. That day has to stop, and it has to start with, first of all, mutual respect, coming together to recognize the benefits that have been here, and then to move forward. As I said, I think there are many areas that we could look at, healthcare being one of them, education being another one. I can say, I think unequivocally, that tribes will not agree to do revenue sharing as it's traditionally identified. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't things that if someone were to develop a package, put it together and say, look, here's a need that we all have, where can the tribes participate? That they would listen to, but that's never been tried. No one has come forward. And whenever they have, they brought the gun with them. They have to leave the gun home, and they have to sit down and talk in a government-to-government relationship. I think that something positive would come out of that.
Okay. Well, Mr. McCarthy, are you aware of the number of states that have revenue sharing in Indian gaming?
I am. Yeah. And quite frankly, we believe that's wrong. Minnesota was the first state to compact, and the benefits that at that time were put out on the table were jobs. And at the time, it was Governor Rudy Perpich. And it was jobs in areas where there weren't jobs in the rural parts of the state. And so there was never even a discussion of revenue sharing at that time. It was after Minnesota signed its compacts and we got going that it appeared as though this was going to be a huge success. At that point, other states said, okay, well, we'll... And, you know, there's something else, Mr. Chairman, that I think it's important for everyone to understand. Originally, the state had no place at the table. When the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act was passed, they got a place at the table because they demanded it and went to Congress and said, we need to be included in here. That's how the compacts were originally put down. And so when the tribes sat down and negotiated, it was in good faith, and there was a stipulation, an understanding that if it wasn't in good faith, there would be an alternative. Well, some years after that, the first compacts were signed, and states decided to use the option of the 11th Amendment. Saying that we're sovereigns as well and you can't sue us. And so far it's been left in limbo. So now it's the same story. Tribes are being bent over and said, you will pay or we won't give you a compact. And so a lot of the revenue sharing agreements that you see were not done in good faith. They were done in the same fashion where there was a threat, either this or nothing. Well, Minnesota, fortunately, and I'd like to think knowingly, did not enter into that. That Minnesota did a fair, honest negotiation. People also forget there was give and take. It wasn't all one way. The tribes gave up things. For example, and we talked about this earlier, we've not asked for anything beyond what the scope of the compact originally was agreed to. We could have, but we didn't. And so that's one of the things we gave up. We didn't want to do baccarat and paigal poker and craps and all of that.
Well, Mr. McCarthy, in recognizing, you know, that the governments, you know, involved at federal and the Indian gaming community, and your statement that the state pretty much has to even fight for a seat at the table, I think drives us to situations such as this in order to have a voice in this particular industry. Representative Biskins, do you have any closing remarks?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, while I appreciate the discussion and feel it's very, very important discussion to have, and I realize that my bill is the last one on this agenda for today, and that's why the discussion is being placed here, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that the main purpose of this bill, it has nothing to do with the compacts. I am not trying to break the compacts. I'm not trying to break the tribes in any way, shape, or form. One of my constituents said to me, you know, putting a slot machines at Canterbury Park is kind of like looking at a real busy intersection that only has one gas station at one corner. How many of us see really busy intersections that have two gas stations at opposing corners or three gas stations, and they coexist with each other just fine? This is a busy place, and in fact, some would say that each benefit, because that area becomes now more of a destination for people to go find good gas prices. This bill is all about Canterbury Park. It's about the horse industry. It's about the good that this industry does for the state of Minnesota, an over $1 billion industry, and how can it be enhanced. That's the purpose of this bill. Now, sometimes get labels as legislators depending upon the bills you carry, and I'm Mr. Racino, and wherever I go, folks say, well, when are you going to get it done? When are you going to get it done? And I talk about what it's like down here and the honest debate back and forth. Time and time again, constituents finish with, well, then just let us decide. Why don't you put it to the people, all right? Let the people decide, and that's the purpose of this bill, and I appreciate your support.
Representative Hoppe, do you have a question?
No, okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Adkins.
Just two short ones.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, last session when we talked about the Racino, you indicated that the Minnesota Constitution did not require a constitutional amendment to go forward. Is it your testimony now that a constitutional amendment is required to go forward with a Racino or a casino outside of the Minnesota lottery?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative. No, absolutely not. A constitutional amendment is not required, but what a constitutional amendment would do is it would tell us definitively as legislators, here's the voice of the people. Right. And so that's why I choose this route, not because it is essential to having a Racino at Canterbury, but because it seems to be essential for us as legislators to have another way to hear the voice of the people.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you. And Representative Biskins, does the governor support your proposal?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, I have not talked to the governor about this proposal, and I'm not quite sure, but my recollection of constitutional amendments is they do not go to the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins, follow.
I have a great amount of regard for the governor. As long as we're inviting the governor to send somebody over on Tuesday, perhaps they might wish to comment on whether or not they think this is a good idea.
Okay. Comment well taken. Any other questions, members?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman Westerberg. Mr. Atkins, Representative Atkins, your idea earlier about Representative Westerberg's bill, maybe we could just attach it to this one, and then we have two questions on the ballot. We seem to be very interested in constitutional questions these days.
Almost too interested, okay. Representative.
Okay, members. With that, I will renew Representative Sellers' motion to send House File 3100 to the 3101 here to the full regulated Industries Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion passes and prevails. Congratulations, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zellers.
If it would please the committee, I'd like to move House File 3099.
Representative Zellers is moving House File 3099, which was defeated on a tie vote later. You're moving it, moving it for reconsideration?
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, I just need to move the bill.
Okay. Well, House File 3099 has been moved before the committee, then. Where do we go from here?
Move it to the full committee?
You're suggesting moving...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Move for approval and then re-referral to the full regulated industry committee for consideration.
Okay, is there any discussion on the motion as provided here by Representative Zellers? In hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion passes, and House File 3099 is also referred on to the full Regulated Industries Committee. Thank you, Representative Zellers. Yeah, a little bit. Members, just so you have a heads up, too, as far as our next meeting is Tuesday at 2 o'clock, where we'll be taking up another list of wonderful gambling options. And that particular meeting is scheduled for 2 hours, but it appears that the number of bills and I believe the controversy that will be on a number of them may cause us to go later. And so we have reserved a room for later in the evening, too, from 6 o'clock until 10. And so with that, this meeting is adjourned.